Everybody, welcome to another exciting episode of Data Exposed. I'm your host, Scott Klein, and with me are Tobias and Slava. Probably don't need any introduction because they've been here quite a bit, talking about the awesome SQL on Linux, a favorite topic. Last time we talked about the how. This time we're going to talk about the...
Well, the how.
More of the how.
Yeah. No, Slava felt that we only kind of scratched the surface, and really it's not even worth...
40 minutes of just scratching the surface.
Yeah, we should probably have canceled the last show. It's not even a real, actually.
That's right. Okay, we'll do it.
Not even worth talking about.
Really. Okay, all right. So why don't you guys take a second and introduce yourself just really quick again, and then we'll get into more of the deeper how.
Yeah, I'm Tobias Tanström, product manager working on SQL Server on Linux.
I'm Slava Ox, and I'm engineer manager who's working on the SQL Server on Linux.
Okay, so today we're talking about more of the how, and in terms of what do we have? What do you have for us today?
So we wanted to kind of use the term we loosely here.
Sure.
Some of us. 50%, wanted to do a little bit more of a dig into the how. And I think next time we're going to be on maybe about something else.
Okay.
But we want to show you kind of the end-to-end flow of how the technology works. And it's been amazing. It's more and more people are talking about it, reading and so on. We put out a blog, obviously. So we wanted to go through basically, you know, from the start, you start this. For people who haven't seen before, right, we have something we call the host extension.
Yeah, so let's, can we recap, take 2 minutes?
No.
Sure. And recap the last show, if it leads into this one.
Yes, right? Beautiful. Yes. Yeah, I think that's what we should do.
So why don't you take a second and do that, or either one of you.
which was what I was trying to do. So basically what the team has done is made it possible to run the SQL Server Windows executables that we build and we've been running for decades.
Yep.
On Linux, right? And we spent a lot of time in the last show going through the technology we call the SQL PAL, our platform abstraction layer that makes this possible.
Yep.
And below the SQL PAL sits something we call a host extension.
Yep.
And you have basically one host extension per operating system that you need to support. So one for Linux, then one for Windows, and so on, right?
Okay.
So now we wanted to go through and see exactly what happens and actually show the code. Right, as we transition from the Linux world into the Windows world and back through this host extension SQL PAL technology, which we talked about a lot last time, is based on research from Microsoft Research and a project called Drawbridge.
And so just to add to this, last time we stopped at the debugger when we showed the debugger as a demo, and today we're actually going to use the debugger to walk you through the actual end-to-end scenario.
Yeah. Oh, very nice.
Yes.
Sweet.
Here's a treat.
Love those demos.
Yeah, this is going to be cool. So the thought just before Slava really jumps into it is, the whole thing starts with you start our ELF file, right, on Linux, which is really the SQL PAL host extension. Mm-hmm. And then that thing starts a process, right, or a process gets started, and it's running in the ELF file, and it then loads the Windows executables, right?
Okay.
Which is not ELF, the Linux format. They are all PE files, program executables, which is the format on Windows.
Right. Okay.
And then basically says, hey, start a new thread, start execution at this point in the PE file. And actually one of the engineers on the team, Bob, made a very interesting blog post about showing that this is really just the same Intel instructions that are happening if you're running on Linux as if you're happening, if you're running on Windows.
Yep. And today we're actually going to show those instructions, what it takes to actually to transition between PE world and ELF world.
That's exactly
what we're going to show.
And also go through, once we get started in the Windows world, at some point you have to transition back because you need to ask the operating system for something. You need to do a syscall. So we're going to he's going to show the end-to-end
between
here.
The PAL layer and the...
SQL PAL and host extension, and then
okay,
exactly.
Cool. Yeah. Now, what's the? Is there a lot of overhead in this?
Well, you'll see it now.
Let's hold the question.
You'll see.
I got to ask questions. Okay. All right. Yeah. So I guess demo time.
Yes. I think you and I have to ask questions so that it goes from Slava speak to normal speak.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's right. All right.
Okay.
So we want to switch over to that
laptop. Yes, we want to switch to this laptop, and I will start. So okay, so here's I'm on Linux, and I'm starting SQL Server. And as you notice here, like we start in DBG breach, so that means that we start in SQL Server on the debugger, and then this is the WinDBG command that I need to connect from the Windows world to connect to start debugging SQL Server process.
And I think it's worth pointing out, you just given the name, this is not a drawbridge.
Yeah, yes, right? That's a debugger bridge.
It's debugger bridge.
Yes.
Just to be
nothing
clear.
Nothing has to do with the drawbridge. So yes, that's a very, very good point, because people can. So now,
big clarification.
I'm going to do my Windows box and actually launch a debugger. And so in here, like
when. So why don't you launch the debugger in your Linux box?
I potentially could do that. We actually have the option to do that for Microsoft has a line of debuggers that can run in the console mode, and those debuggers we can actually launch, and that's how we test debugging support on Linux today in the lab. So yes, you can do that, but right now we want to show source level, better source level access and so forth.
And
so
it's also the
better experience, debugger experience.
It's also the fact that you are used to WinDBG.
Yeah, not really. Like many of us can use CDB, no problem. So I think the important point here to notice is that there is a minus B parameter, is slash dash B, and it indicates to break right at the boot point. So if we look at our WinDBG screen, in here you can see that we broke in right at the point we're booting SQL PAL. So this is our entry point into the Win, like pretty much in PU world.
So are we now at the breakpoint? Are we in ELF world or in PU?
Now we in PU world. So we already transferred. So there's a bunch of work has been done already. A thread was created. The package were opened. PE file were loaded in memory, mapped into memory.
We're at the third step.
Okay. So unfortunately, today, we cannot step through the booting sequence of the host extension itself from Windows world. But I think it will take us not that much effort to actually make it happen as well if we need to. But I think that the real interesting things what we're doing at the entry point of the SQL PAL itself. So this is pretty much the entry point. And we need to run some of the things before we can really break into the debugger. So if you can see here, we need to set up some things. We need to set up some context, thread context, so that WinDBG, when we transfer the transport to WinDBG, so we can have everything nice and dandy, and so WinDBG can understand. So that's why we can, for example, at this point today, we cannot break in right here yet, right at the entry point. So we need to set up some state and all that. So now, remember the last time we talked about beautiful puppies, right?
puppies, which
were our ABI. So right now we can easily look at them.
When Slava says puppy, it means ABI, application binary interface.
Yes. So let's take a quicker look at
the puppies.
Yes. This is the set of the ABIs. Actually, I just dumped them in a debugger that we use to run our SQL PAL on top of host extension. The interesting point here right now, as you can see, they're all null. So we just starting the booting, and they were not initialized. The entry points were not initialized. Oh. And in the next few steps, as we're going to be stepping through the debugger, we actually do this in initialization. And I believe actually the next few steps, if we just we do it here. And if I'm doing it now, boom, you can see all the call tables are initialized, and now that SQL PAL can invoke any of these methods and talk to host extension.
Okay.
So now the first thing we're going to do is, as Tobias outlined in his PowerPoint deck, is to try to allocate memory. And we'll definitely at some point in blog post, we'll talk more about how memory gets allocated and how we manage virtual address space inside of SQL PAL versus host extension. It's a very interesting topic. So now let's just do a few jump through the few hoops. And here we are. And this is the first memory allocation, virtual address space allocation that we made making from, just want to move the window. This is our source code. This is the virtual memory manager. We actually initialized the virtual memory inside of the SQL PAL. And this is the first call we make into the host extension from SQL PAL.
Okay.
So far we booted up. We set all the pointers to the syscalls.
Yes, we set up some context, and now we're about to call into the.
So now we're going to go from the PE world into the
we
Linux.
We get in there. Yes. Okay. So yes. So the interesting point. Let's disassemble the instructions. This is our beautiful work, right? The first thing you can see here, we actually go and call the host parameter, thread host parameter. So every thread has a state associated with the host or with itself, right? So in this case, this is actually call. What it does, it actually goes in into the and retrieves thread state. This is a thread environment block that many Windows folks are familiar with, developers. This is where the thread local storage is kept.
Thread local storage.
Yes. Now, the very interesting observation here, and we really sort of got almost lucky, I would say. let's disassemble this call and see what it is. So as you can see here.
Lucky in the context of making this happen with the Windows executable running on the Linux.
On the Linux. Okay. And so here's what I wanted to highlight, right? So here's as our binaries, Win32 binaries, PE binaries, they use GS register, segment register, to retrieve thread environment block. And
what is thread environment block?
Thread environment block, as I just outlined, it's a thread context that operating systems use to track the state of the thread. There is thread local storage, and there is a C runtime thread local storage, and so forth and so forth. The thread state associated with a given thread, right? And the operating systems, especially Linux and Windows, use segment registers to track those states. So, and here's where the luck came from. Is that Linux guys are using a fast register. They're at like different segment registers. And Windows uses GS to track it. And Linux uses FS. So that means we can coexist in the same world at the same time. Okay. And so we don't need to do any extra magic to try to remap and reset.
Let's see if I understand. So you're saying we don't have the problem of a Windows thread state overwriting Linux thread state or
exactly.
The reverse.
Or trying to
this is where you're saying we sort of got lucky in this.
Yes. So, I mean, we don't need to do to figure out how to override it, and also at the same time we don't need to keep track of like if we had to borrow the same register or the same segment register, then we would have to do some extra magic, extra complexity had to be added to track this. So
which could also be some performance penalty, I guess.
Of course, yes. So
of course.
So now let's so now let's look at our. So we are in. As I already pointed out, we're already in virtual memory manager initializer, and we call in into. Oh, hold on. I don't know why. Oh, I forgot to call it cut and paste. Sorry.
It's Control C, Control.
Yes, thank you.
Command C.
We are back at the, let's see, at RAP. And so we are back at the memory manager, virtual memory initialize, right? So now, if I disassemble it further, we retrieve the thread state so that we can do the transition. And further on, we're actually going to make actual call into the, host extension world, right? So just to
which is on the Linux side.
Yes, just to make things faster for everyone. Virtual PALAC. I'm just looking at the. Oops, I misspelled it.
You might not be searching in the right box.
No, I'm searching in the right box. Okay, we're going to disassemble this function. This is our entry point. And so here's the answers to the questions that you've been looking for. Let me do something here.
Here we're getting, now we're calling a puppy, right?
Yes, so I'm gonna put the breakpoint there. And I'm okay, and we now call in the puppy.
Calling the puppy. Finally with the puppy, yes.
We finally got to the puppy.
So, yes. So this is the questions that many people were asking. What is the overhead for calling the puppy, calling the ABI, right? So here's this instruction stream, as you can see, to actually make it happen. So this is, we preserve the volatile registers because the two calling conventions were from PE world into the ELF world are different. So we're making sure that we preserve the state, we preserve XMM registers, volatile registers, and then here's the actual call, right? So for like here we preserve the registers, mm-hmm. and then here's the actual call. The other thing you want to would like to notice here is that we actually switching stack right here. Mm-hmm. So we have two stacks. We have a PE stack for a given thread. Yep. We have a PE stack and we have an ELF stack. Yeah, so this is the stack switch. So how do you know that this is indeed what I just said, that is going to call into the... So this is our beautiful extension. And it tells me this is a symbol. This is where I'm looking at the ELF world, and it tells me virtual memory allocator, allocate function in palcalls.cpp in the Linux world. Okay? Yeah. So, and what I can do here, if I want to, I can do bpf pal, like something like this. Oh, sorry. And I just set a breakpoint in this world.
Okay.
Ah, so interesting. So now, once we hit the call, it's going to go into the...
So once we hit that line, that instruction, that assembly instruction, yeah. whatever we're at, yeah. it's going to break into the debugger. But I can continue, for example, in here, if you see, I can continue, actually, let's do tracing, right? I can continue doing tracing. Here's, I'm executing the instructions. Boom, I just switched this to call stack. And debugger immediately noticed it, and now it shows me the ELF state as well. So I can see my original call stack in here if I just issue Windows command, or I can do this and I can see now ELF state at the same time. It recognizes that it's in stack, yeah. right? So now.
So this is easily operating in both ELF and PE.
Yes, right? Yes. So now.
I think it's important like for our developers that you don't have to switch tools yeah. back and forth. And most of them obviously live in the PE world. Right.
Yes.
You're doing, you know, building something for Storage Engine or Query Optimizer or something like that. You're all up there. Right?
Yes.
But some of the engineers are debugging across.
Right? Yeah, it's a great way to go. Look, here's the two that are communicating yes. back and forth and quite easily. Right?
Of course. Right. And I can examine memory yeah. and at the same time and all that. So now, if you notice, before I was issuing T command, which was traced from PE world, now I'm going to be slightly changing the command, and I'm going to be using a bang T. And as you notice, like these instructions will start being executed. Like you see, this
yep.
will start moving. Oh, this. And so here, we just executing.
We're executing.
We're executing.
Yes. And here you can see we entered, like we're about to go to the call.
Okay.
And if I'm going to do,
if
I'm going to do, either I can enter that function through band yeah. T, or I can hit go and I'm going to hit the breakpoint, right? Like if I, here I am.
I hit the breakpoint.
I hit the breakpoint, and here's my source code. So here I can actually say how many source lines I want to see in the debugger. Like I want to dump, let's say 30 lines and 10 before, so I can see the function itself. And then I can do bang K, here's my call stack, and then here's my function that I just entered. Uh-huh. Okay? So this is a Linux code that now I can
so
go
this
and
is
execute.
Code in the host extension.
It's in the host extension that performs the memory allocation. So in fact, what it does is and we maintain, like, in this particular case, it's just going to do, like, I believe it's going to commit to memory like that was a request. I don't remember what it was exactly, mm-hmm. but like it's going to go through this function and commit, and then it's going to go and.
Will make the syscall
into Linux. Yeah.
Into Linux. Okay. Yeah.
So can you show us that?
We could, but it's going to be. I don't think it's going to be that interesting because there is a more code we're going to be executing before that. So it's going to be because we're going to the data size. So eventually we will hit the call. But I think there is a way more, there is something more interesting here. So first, like if you like, for example, as you can see, like we can continue be executing. So as you can see here, yep. I'm continuously executing.
We're executing.
So and
yeah, I'm that's true. We're executing. Hey, Slava, that's not. We're executing publish.
Yes.
That doesn't sound right.
So my, I made a little bit like let's say like let's just do 20 lines, and then it's gonna be like this. Okay. So now we can you can see as we're moving, we're executing this cursor is moving, okay. And all the calls I get, all the calls I made. There is something more interesting that you guys probably missed.
I can't imagine.
So let's look at the what is the most interesting part of this is the overhead.
Thing, yeah.
Is overhead and
it's the kittens. We missed the kittens.
The kittens.
Yes. So here's the assembly. So this is we're talking about. So like everyone's asking about the overhead. What is overhead? So if you think about it, it's about 50 instructions. Probably plus minus five. I don't know, like we can count them, right? And depending on number of parameters that we pass. But this is very interesting thing, and this is what we encounter in our day-to-day development. Every day, is like as we're going through the code and all that, there is some leftovers, sort of like from the drawbridge code. Mm-hmm. Can you spot them?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. Aha. Okay. Yes, I know the BS with his deductive methods.
He's
probably looking at these two pushref case, and he's thinking, why do we have two of them? Oh, no. Yes, you exactly right.
All right. Very good, Tobias.
No, so here's the interesting
thing.
I was thinking
the same thing, exactly.
So my point here is what I'm trying to say is that this is how we clean up the code. So this is an opportunity for us to actually improve this code by eliminating three instructions. And the way, like, so what happens here is that the original code, because they didn't have a debugger support, when Andrew did his port on Andrew Bauman to run Drawbridge on Linux, mm-hmm. what he's done, he didn't want to, when he was doing the debugging, he didn't want to debug through the ELF world because he didn't have a proper debugger support. So he had to turn off TraceBit. But he wanted to remember the trace bit on when he comes back. So here's exactly what's happening. Here he's pushing the flags. He resets the trace bit, and then it pops it back. And so this way, from this point on, in this way, his world debugger would not, like would stop tracing it. He would assume that this is going to be as a single step execution, and then he will come back whenever he pops the flags, which is going to be somewhere later. So we can actually go ahead right now and eliminate these three instructions right now. And just show that the entire thing just boots and works. Do you want to do that?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
We're moving from debugging to optimizing.
Yes.
And three whole instructions.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. How many percent faster is SQL Server going to be now?
This is the point.
How
right?
many?
So, there's lots of opportunities for the optimizations, and of course, this is not going to because again, as we said last time. Most of the executions happening inside of SQL Path, where SQL Server is optimized to run in user mode. We hardly make any syscalls or ABI calls. So this, what we're going to do, like what we're going to have is ABI calls, IO paths, code path links.
Yep.
But again, considering that it's 10,000 of instructions, eliminating three instructions is not a big deal. But at the same time,
So you're saying typically an IO is in the order of 10,000 instructions.
Yes.
Okay. And we're removing three. Yeah. And you're saying it's about 50, 100 instructions overhead.
Yeah, but having said that, there is still opportunity because manipulating with the processor flags is still expensive instruction from the processor standpoint.
Yeah, but and another point we should bring is that because of the way we're debugging allows you to find things like this that you didn't have previously. Correct?
Yes, exactly. Because you can see as you're debugging through, this is like this how we find things. As you're debugging through, you're looking at things and it's like, oh, this doesn't make sense. Yeah. Or I can actually, there's opportunity for optimization.
Yeah, I think that's like we talked about in a couple of the previous shows, like the two huge projects that we've done is one is, again, getting all of the tests that run against Windows, yep. SQL Server on Windows to run against SQL Server on Linux.
Yeah.
So you know that you're getting the same behaviors and we get the same thorough testing, performance and functional, right? And the other one is obviously being able to have an engineering system so that the engineers can debug and work through the whole code base.
Yeah, end to end like we're talking about.
Yeah, right? Because we all know developers are lazy, right? Especially the Kazakhstani Russian people. Named Slava, right? So obviously the more fluent your environment is, the more efficient you can you can work, right?
Oh, hold on, something is not right.
No, something is not right. It's a very good color coding there.
No, this is just lab machine. I didn't have my environment set up here. So
can you talk about this file?
Give me a sec. I want to do some modifications while you're talking.
We'll talk about something else. What did you do this weekend?
Well, I tried to get out my driveway this morning.
Yeah, that was, we had very slippery driving conditions this morning here in Redmond.
Yes, we did.
That was that was somewhat scary, actually.
Which is not common here. A lot of parked cars on the road, people going, okay, I'm just bailing and walking home.
Yeah. Okay, so here's what I did. I removed these three instructions as we discussed, and I just saved the file. I want to exit it.
So we spec'd it.
This is the file that actually we used to generate the assembly. It generates the assembly that you actually saw for the song.
Can you explain a bit more about how we use this file?
So we use it to, as I said, there are macros here, as you can see, there's my defined macros, and these macros use, like, when they expand, they generate assembly code, and that's what we
compile.
So we compile them into the host extension, and then host extension presents them into the, as we saw, into the SQL PAL, so SQL PAL can initialize its entry point, so you can call into back.
Okay.
And we call this something, there's a word for this, no?
No, not really. Thanks.h file.
There we go.
Let's see.
Dun, 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 dun.
So this is we're building.
And what are you building now?
So we're building actual host extension. And once it's built, we're going to go to the front end. We have to rebuild the front end so we can pull the binaries. We can pull the latest extension.
Live coding, host ladies extension. And gentlemen.
And front end?
Data exposed.
Front end is a SQL Server binary that actually like loads
the ELF.
Yeah,
so SQL Server that you start when you start the service on Linux.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That's the thing that then loads the host extension that kicks off with the puppies and stuff.
So here I'm doing make install. So this is the, I'm going, and I'll need to do one small thing. Once it all gets
installed. Oh, and we have this SQL Server SFP there.
Yes, that's
the beautiful single file package.
Yes.
So that's where we put all of the various binaries into a couple of these SFPs.
Yeah, files. So we have different packages. We have a system SFP, we have SQL Server SFP, and we have other SSPs. So we're down here. Now we're going to do exit here. And I need to just do one small thing here. Need to take this SFP because I built it myself, but it doesn't have to do anything with the code we changes. It's just because what happened right now when I did the MS SQL config build and install, it pulled SFP from other location, system SFP. And that system SFP, like today we had a build break in the lab, and that system SFP doesn't have proper PDB. I need to copy.
We have build breaks?
Sometimes.
Clearly, it's not because of my PowerPoint.
So now. Oh, sorry. I need to exit SQL WinDBG because my port is preoccupied. Okay, here we are.
So now we're going to stop at the same breakpoint.
So we're going to do exactly the same thing, and we're going to look at the disassembly of the methods.
After we optimized it together, the three of us.
Tobias and I had a big hand in this.
Yeah, we spotted it. And
that's right. We spec'd it out, wrote the documentation.
PowerPoint.
That's right.
Here you are.
Now we're finding the address of that puppy.
Yeah. And as you can see here.
They're gone! No.
No, he didn't.
There.
He's still there.
It wasn't us.
Oh, I know why. One more try. It wasn't you guys.
Wasn't
one
us.
More try.
Oh my God.
This is real life.
But I think this is pretty. I don't think there's so frequently that you see live coding at this level.
No.
Right? This is live assembly coding.
That's right. We're breaking new ground.
Yeah, we are. We are.
Guys, you're making making me nervous. I had to do
good.
I had to do my clean.
Oh!
I think I hope that. Let's check if my changes are still there.
Let's see.
Yes, they're there. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's hope nothing breaks.
At least we have fun at work.
That's right. Do you want to see how much fun? Come to Building 16 and sit next to Slava.
Yes. Yeah. Give me health hazard also. Depends a little bit on what's going on.
Okay, so now we need to do one more, the same exact thing as we did before. Make install.
And you copy the SFP?
I will copy it right now.
And you stopped the other thing?
Yeah, everything stopped. Yeah. So, keeping the fingers crossed. Okay.
Slava.
Oh, I don't know why I'm tapping today. I was debugging something else. That's why I'm. Not for sure.
Click in the window.
I could actually use any one of them. So let's see if the trick worked. No, it didn't. I don't know why. For some reason, Bill didn't pick it up. So we'll have to
that means we need to get another episode.
So that's right.
No,
looks like we'll be having Slava and Tobias back.
No, I don't.
Tomorrow.
Do you want to take a peek at what you?
So we have time. We can do it, right? You guys can.
We got 7 minutes.
Let me think through what's going on here.
So. Meanwhile, I don't know if you watched our earlier episodes, if you're interested in hearing a bit more around the context that we jumped through. And again, we have this fairly long, we did two blog posts that are interesting. One is, it's on the regular SQL Server blog. One is basically SQL Server on Linux, the how, an introduction.
Yep.
That goes through a bunch of the details of like how we did it, challenges, different options we went through. And like we mentioned, Bob in the team has a nice, fairly short blog post showing off a good example, an interesting example of this also transition between ELF and PE worlds.
Okay.
So that if you're interested, then you go take a look at those.
I know why.
Now you have to tell us.
Yes, sir.
So hold on. So I know why. I did not modify the right one. Because
But you said it doesn't matter which one.
No, so we'll talk about it. Give me a sec. So what happened was that I modified the one that was five parameters. Mm.
the wrong puppy.
Yes. Here, look. Here it doesn't have it.
Gotta get the right puppy.
Yeah.
So everything was good. Puppy selection failed.
If you look at this file.
No, we're done. We don't.
We should be shipping right now.
Depending on the number of parameters, we have a few macros, different macros that we invoke, and that's what actually happens here. And so I modified the first one, which did not have
The wrong macro.
The wrong macro. Yes. Oh, okay. And so now. In this case,
we'll take it up with him in his performance review.
How do you want to handle the transition?
now you got to worry about goodness.
You have to figure out how to cut where.
No. Okay. Well.
Okay. So let's continue. So now.
Oh, I guess we're not done yet.
No. Like now we have we just cut out the instruction. Right from so now, as you can see, it's a different function because we didn't modify different macro. But as you can see now, it's still like we removed those three instructions.
Yep.
And if you think so, do you think it will start SQL Server or not? So the big question here, right? Will you modify the assembly? Will it boot or not?
Yeah, of course it will.
You think so?
Yeah, you're typically right.
I have faith in you, Slava.
Okay, yes. So let's do BD star. We need to disable all the breakpoints.
Oh, no more breakpoints?
Yes, well, let's see what the break. Oh, by the way, we have a bunch of other breakpoints here, which is very interesting. This is how we report to debugger, how we load modules, how we create threads. So the WinDBG is aware of this. And this is the breakpoints we set on these modules, and LLDB reports them, so you can see them.
So this is the LLDB talking to WinDBG over the debugger bridge.
Yes. And so now we hit the, and so what's happening? Oh, it's actually loading. So we have SQL Server starting.
So now we're clearly in the PE world, since a bunch of DLLs loading there.
Yes, and this is the initial entry breakpoint when the SQL Server starts for the debugger. And here, here's your beautiful SQL Server starting on the debugger, which just modified and fixed the instruction sequence.
The beautiful
sequence.
SQL Server. That's right. I think that's a good wrapping point.
We've started the beautiful SQL Server. Yes. And with that,
now it's optimized.
And now it's optimized. Three instructions.
Three instructions.
It will now, kick butt.
That's right. That's what I'm saying. We should ship it right now.
Yes. No, we have still work to do.
I like it, given the fact that this showed, you know, the end, like you said, the end to end and how these communicate. You know, and through one debugger, you know, we could step between both and be able to like optimize and look to see what's going on in both worlds. Yes. Very nice.
Yes. And also, as you can see, the overhead of the call is actually not.
Yeah, and that was my earlier question, right? It was which was, like you said,
50 to 100 instructions.
Yeah,
less than 100, like it's less than 50.
Child's
exactly.
Play.
Don't do that.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So we look forward to having these guys back in a month to talk to us something else awesome.
Yes.
Right. And have just as much more fun and maybe more live debugging than coding.
Yes. Awesome. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks. All right, thanks everybody. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time.
Okay, thank you.